Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this weekend show, we're going to be again focusing on the resource sector, all for you investors out there trying to filter through what some of the best stories are, some of the most significant news, and quite frankly, just how strong this bull market could continue on for, lifting all stocks. But again, you do need to be still somewhat selective in this market because some stocks are definitely outperforming the wide range of resource stocks out there. In the first half of the show, we are chatting with Matt Geiger, managing partner at MJG Capital. Matt, as we always do, we like to start off by just getting an update from you in terms of any changes in your portfolio, in your overall strategy at MJG, being focused on resource stocks, since we have seen silver break out. Gold also recently intraday touched a all-time high. Copper, it's off its highs, but it's still right around that $5 level. So Matt, from a portfolio management standpoint, any big changes we should be aware of at MJG?
Good to join you again, Corey and Chad. And yeah, a lot has changed on the market side of things since we last touched base in mid-April. But on the portfolio front, really nothing too dramatic to report. Just as we were and have been all year at this point, we are fully deployed, so very minimal cash position at this point. And I will say very pleased with the performance that we've seen starting in March with gold's breakout in early March, right around the PDAC conference, really going through May. So hopefully that continues, knock on wood. Yeah, on the portfolio front, we still remain heavily weighted towards copper, getting closer now to a 40% weighting within the portfolio. So this is by far the highest weighting towards that metal that we've had really since the fund's inception. Part of that has been driven by some outperformance amongst our copper names. Lara is one example in terms of a name that I've written about many times previously in MJG partnership letters. We actually also just got an allocation last week to a highly sought after placement that is copper focused. I'm really not in a position to talk about that one publicly at this point, but hopefully some point I will be here. But that takes our copper position just that much higher. Otherwise, we're winding down a smallish position, one that I haven't discussed publicly, and then averaging into a couple other existing holdings. And then other than that, we did actually at the end of April, since we last talked, participated in a financing of an existing holding of ours. And this is actually the third different financing we've done with this group, which is a Nevada-focused exploration story with excellent management, in my opinion. And yeah, aside from this copper, new copper placement that I just mentioned, I think that will be our only new name that comes into the portfolio in Q2. So I'm largely sitting tight, doing some things on the margin, and trying my best to beat off feelings of FOMO that I think we all feel in these exciting times, and just trying to stick to the plan and keep the portfolio nice and concentrated with names that I know and have conviction in.
Well, Matt, just to that point, when you get positioned in your portfolio, you generally look at the company first, the opportunity, the management team, the project, and all of the specifics. And only at the very latter part of that filtering process do you even consider the metal a focus. But as you say, you do have a pretty big weighting to copper in the MJG portfolio. So let's maybe talk about copper. We just saw some big news out where the hedge fund manager, Pierre Anderon, expects possibly a quadrupling of copper. There was all these articles that came out last week where he's talking about 40,000 a ton. We've been talking about 10 to 11,000 a ton lately, and 40,000 a ton would be a 4X move in copper. In that kind of a backdrop, even if that's maybe slightly aggressive, do you consider that to be something that factors in now that you have such a big weighting in copper in your own portfolio?
Yeah, that did make some headlines, didn't it? I got a number of texts actually from generalist friends that saw that. I think that article was featured in the financial, or that quote was featured in the Financial Times originally and then made the rounds to mainstream publications. Look, I should first say I'm naturally skeptical, honestly, of anyone making these pie in the sky metal price forecasts. I'd argue it's largely poor form. And even though it can make for good headlines, investors in the junior space are better suited to really tune out these prognostications and As you note, I really urge focusing on company-specific factors, the people involved, the company structure, whether the project works at spot metal prices, yes, spot metal prices, pending catalysts, and then also the current valuation of the company relative to what the investor's projected fair value is for the company. And so I think it's very important to tune out the metal of focus as much as you can from your investment process, which I know to folks new to the space may seem counterintuitive, but it's very easy to get caught up in flavor of the month type stories where they're chasing the hot metal. And unless there's real substance or quality to the company, those stories usually end in tears. So I've really made my living investing, focusing on companies where value can be created, even if metal prices were to stay flat in perpetuity. So I think that is the way to think about it. And for the vast majority of investors, I think that's the way to go. Now, to Andoran's claim of $40,000 copper, which is equivalent to just over $18 per pound. I usually think of copper from a per pound perspective personally. Is it entirely outside of the realm of possibility? Even though I think it's irresponsible to be saying such things, I would argue it's not totally outside of possibility. All one really needs to do is look towards the past. And in copper's last great bull market, this would have been between late 2000 through early 2011, we saw copper rally from 60 cents in late 2001 to a high of $4.60 in early 2011. So that's a move of 7.5x magnitude. So extremely significant move. Now noted, it did take a full decade to play out. So for the sake of comparison, let's just assume that history exactly rhymes in this case, which I think is not a fair assumption, but we can just take that at face value. This current copper move started from a base of $2 per pound in the depths of the COVID panic in early 20. We traded down slightly below $2 per pound, but we'll say $2 per pound for this exercise. So if one were to see this 7.5x move in the copper price from the trough to the peak, we would be looking at a copper price at just over $15 per pound. So while this is a little bit short of Andoran's bold prediction, it's in the rough ballpark. So I think what he's saying is possible. It's not totally inconceivable. But even still, I think investors would be better served assuming flat copper prices from here on out and focus on stories, focus on people where you believe value can be created, even if the copper price didn't move a single cent from its current perch at $4.80 per pound. I really feel firmly that's the way to go.
So Matt, what do you think about all these copper companies out there that do have large assets in the ground around the world that are pretty much shovel ready? They just need maybe permits, but a lot of them simply just need the capital to get them going. How do you balance out an investment narrative on those, but then filtering down to, I know you like exploration plays, people out there trying to make new discoveries, potentially higher grade discoveries. It's one of the hits against some of these large projects is that they don't carry the high grade that some of the new exploration, more exciting plays can. How do you balance out those two investment narratives?
Yeah, that's a fair point. So I think the first type of story you're referring to would be these late stage developers where the deposit's largely defined already. We know roughly how big it is and at what grade. And the question is, can it be built? Will it be built? And are you paying a fair price for it at its current stage? So I think all of those things need to be looked at one by one. And some of these projects look great on paper and would make a lot of money as a mine, but either for social or environmental reasons, won't be built or are very unlikely to be built. So I think that's a key point to focus on for these types of late stage copper development plays. Then you want to look at the timing. Some of these may be built later this decade or early next, but it's unrealistic to expect any movement in the near term. So if you're making an investment in that type of story, the only catalyst that you can hope for, other than a doubling in the copper price, which would admittedly help the share price, would be a takeover offer from a larger party that then wants to build the project. So those types of stories can be a bit devoid of clear share price catalysts. And you're waiting around for either the copper price to work in your favor or for a larger party to come in and take them out. And then you need to look at the price being paid. So that's why I'm hesitant to say I'm all in or I'm all out on these types of stories. They should be discounted relative to both the amount of risk in terms of receiving permits and the social license to go ahead, and also discounted on how long, even if everything goes perfectly to plan, one could expect before shovels could actually go into the ground and the project could presumably be built. So I think for a very rough rule of thumb for a feasibility stage project that looks good on paper, makes sense at $4.50, $4 copper, you maybe want to discount that 70% from what the after-tax NPV is, assuming a reasonable discount rate. And if you look at that project and you think it's going to go ahead at some point here, but it's trading at 0.3 NAV, then it's fairly priced. Again, these are very like broad stroke numbers. But if you're seeing it and it's at 0.1 NAV, and you look and you can't see any critical flaws on the permitting or social side of things, then maybe that could be of interest. So I think it has to be looked at case by case within context, but I think those are the key headlines to look at. I should say, interestingly, the vast majority of our copper exposure does not come from these later stage development projects. I don't think that's a bad way to get exposure to copper, mind you. But the majority of our copper exposure comes from either royalty names, prospect generators. I mentioned Lara earlier. Lara is a bit of a hybrid at this point. They're interesting in that they have 100% owned later stage copper asset called Planalto, and then a kind of prospect generation portfolio to the side of that that also has significant copper exposure. So they're a bit of a hybrid there. But royalty, prospect generation, and then expiration names are primarily where our copper exposure comes from. That said, that new placement that we just put our hands up for last week, that does fall into the later stage pounds in the ground story, where hopefully, if all goes to plan, it could be developed later this decade or early next. So a bit of a mix.
Well, Matt, just a quick follow-up on that. When you think about the landscape of copper mines that actually get built and actually contribute to the copper supply that the world so desperately needs, most of them are large bulk tonnage projects. So some of those late-stage developers that are sitting there with their hand up saying, hey, take me over so we can build this project or partner with me, those are really the ones that, even if they're still drilling on them, are the ones that are likely to get built and actually be contributors. There's not that many high-grade underground copper mines that really make it into production. In the exploration world, there are a lot of investors that get excited about the high-grade copper hits, but the reality is very few of those actually tie together into a deposit that's going to work on an economic basis and be a real copper mine. The big projects that have the low bulk tonnage numbers don't excite retail investors, and yet those are the ones that usually move forward. So how would you parse that out as far as investors looking at the space? Because everybody gets excited about high-grade underground in Australia or in Canada or even in the U.S., but the reality is it's the bulk tonnage projects that get built most of the time.
You're right. I mean, yeah, the big boys of the copper production world, at this point, they're almost exclusively focused on porphyries. I guess some sedimentary deposits as well, if they're large enough, could fit within the mandate. But the world's largest miners are just not interested in VMS or narrow vein, even if it's extremely high grade copper, underground copper deposit. It just doesn't move the needle for them. So that doesn't mean that value can't be created throughout the different ecosystem of copper style deposits. But if you want to sell to the biggest companies in the world, you should be looking at a porphyry, plain and simple there. And yeah, to your credit for those, or to your point, to those later stage stories, you're really not going to move the needle with drill results. So I think to maximize value for shareholders, the exercise needs to be to first limit dilution to the absolute utmost extent possible to preserve value for when that takeover does occur, hopefully later in the cycle if it's well-timed, and also to push as far forward as you can on the permitting and social licensing activities that are needed to get the project to a true shovel-ready status. And while that blocking and tackling on the social and environmental front is not sexy, is not going to move the market with a single news release, that's the stuff that really adds value, at least in the eyes of a potential acquirer. While the market might not value it, it at least gets the project closer to a point where one of these big boys are willing to step in and actually build the project. But the copper market is just so big at this point. Like, this is not lithium. Some of these projects, even for the world's largest miners, you'll see them, well, firstly, they don't have the technical expertise in-house anymore to be focused on more than one mega project at any given time. So I think that's actually bullish for copper longer term, at least on the supply side, where even given infinite money, there's just not enough folks with the know-how within these big companies to be building two or three different projects at once. If that occurred, that's a thing of the past. And you're even seeing some of the world's largest companies prefer to partner up on assets, and you do a 50-50 JV with a similarly sized peer, both to share the financial and technical burdens together. So yeah, I just don't think you can understate how big, complex, and risky building some of these new projects from scratch are. And yeah, the big boys do not feel comfortable focused on more than one at a time. So yeah, that's why I think it's hard to imagine a flood of copper supply coming online anytime in the near future. And we'll probably lengthen out the run of this bull market, one would hope.
Yeah, good point there, Matt. Look, these mines are hard to build, and they take a lot of capital, a lot of time, and a lot of talent. And look, we haven't had a ton of talent coming into this sector. So yeah, these guys do need to focus on individual projects almost one at a time. And as you said, partner up on them to share some of those capital costs. Let's talk about a stock, though, that got some attention this week. One that you've brought up on the show before, being Bravo Mining. A drill result, a new discovery on Tuesday, May 28th, moved the stock about 40%. It's new discovery. The company has this Luanga deposit that was driving the story. That's a PGM deposit, but this new discovery, it's a bit more copper focused. We saw some high grade copper. We actually saw some high grades in terms of other metals as well within that result, but it is maybe one of the biggest news releases of the week. Let's start off with what caught your eye on this new discovery, this copper hit.
Well, sure. I should say up front, we're highly conflicted on this one. The MJG partnership has been Bravo shareholders since early 2022 when the company was private. And I'm happy to say it's our largest single position within the fund. So very biased when it comes to Bravo. But look, this news release was a game changer for the Luanga project. It's not every day that one stumbles on a blind discovery of 11.5 meters at 14% copper with a healthy kicker of 3 grams per ton gold. And the company also estimates that this intercept is 100% true width, which is important as well. It is undercover, but it's starting at 165 meters. So in the scheme of things, that's not particularly deep at all. But one should look at this through an underground lens at this very early stage. And yeah, I should caution that it is very early days. The discovery announced today is at what they call their T5 target. And it's only the second drill hole ever drilled at the target by anyone. Bravo drilled one hole earlier this year that just clipped the edge of the mineralization, and they got a short intercept of 2% copper and were encouraged. So they came back in and drilled this discovery hole with a slightly different orientation, and voila, major discovery announced. So they've now completed a hole 50 meters to the east of the discovery hole announced this morning. And in the news release, they mentioned that assays are still pending, but they did hit 9 meters of similar looking rock. So the market's eyes will then turn to assays from this hole, which I'd imagine will be out in the next 4 weeks, if not sooner, to see if the grade is similar to the step out to the east. And then they also have a hole in progress, which is a 50 meter step out to the west. So I think we will probably see assays from that hole, we'll say, in the next 60 days or so. So those are the immediate things to look for in terms of this discovery. But taking a step backwards, and to your point, Bravo has not been focused on copper mineralization. This is a really interesting case of the sometimes beautiful serendipity that you can see within mineral exploration. There are a lot of surprises in this business. Most of the time, they're ugly surprises, but ever so often, there can be a positive surprise. And I think this is a prime example of that. Bravo was focused, they have a 10 million ounce Luanga deposit, which comes to surface, and it's hosted in layered and mafic and ultramafic complex. And these types of deposits often have a feeder zone. Some folks somewhat promotionally will refer to these as Norilsk style feeder zones. So the real purpose of the exploration program that yielded this discovery hole was to test 11 different EM targets over the footprint of the Luanga project, looking for this mafic intrusive zone that yielded this broad but lower grade deposit at surface. And this was one of the EM targets that they tested, looking for the feeder zone. And lo and behold, they did not find the feeder zone, but instead what they found is previously unknown IOCG mineralization on the project. So this type of mineralization seen elsewhere in the Karajas district. So it's certainly not a surprise from that perspective. this is not what investors and probably management were expecting to see whatsoever. But yeah, they've stumbled into a new style of mineralization. And it says right there in the news release, it seems quite unlikely that it's related to Luongo whatsoever. So it's looking like a second discovery of a different style of mineralization that just happens to be on the same project footprint. So in some ways, you could call this an accidental discovery, but I don't want to take credit away from the management team. A huge amount of geological work went into this exploration program, and obviously they weren't drilling blindly and taking pot shots. This was a curated target amongst 11 that they've highlighted as top priority that had a significant or had significant EM anomalism, but it just yielded a different style of mineralization than what they were drilling for. So it's really exciting. It's a great story, I think.
Well, Matt, this is an interesting story in the sense that a lot of times when companies are testing an EM anomaly, they know there's something there from a chargeability standpoint, but they're not sure exactly what. They poke a hole under the ground. And a lot of times, like you say, the surprises in the industry are a negative surprise. This was a positive surprise, maybe a completely different kind of mineralization. But it reminds me so much of the Hercules silver phenomenon from last year where they're exploring a silver deposit. They have an EM anomaly. They decide to drill a hole at depth to see what's going on. And then they make this big copper discovery and in come a whole lot of new investors that maybe weren't as interested in the silver, but now they're suddenly, you know, amped up about the high grade copper. Well, we're seeing the same kind of thing here where is it possible that something like this for a company like Bravo brings in a different kind of investor? Maybe they weren't animated by PGMs and nickel, but they are animated by copper. Maybe just to talk about those dynamics of how the investor base can change based on discovery.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a very high level, that comparison is apt. Obviously, in the case of Hercules, they had some interesting looking silver mineralization closer to surface. And they fortuitously decided to take a bit of a shot on a deeper EM target to see what was happening there. And lo and behold, they've stumbled upon a major porphyry discovery. And I think that district will yield multiple porphyry centers. I am a believer in the Hercules story, at least longer term. And I understand why Barrick pulled out all the stops to get involved with that story. Yeah, in the case of Bravo, I agree with you. Look, I think the existing Luongo deposit can become a mine. We wouldn't have been shareholders of the story otherwise. So I really like the management team here. The company structure is pristine. They're very well cashed up with their existing plans. And I imagine today's news release and results will likely alter their plans for 2024. We might see them put their foot on the pedal a little bit more aggressively here. But even with a full work program across the project, including metallurgy, 60,000 meters of infill and resource delineation drilling for Luongo, and this higher risk budget of 3,000 meters over 11 targets, they were still expecting to end 2024 with $20 million in the bank. So again, I think we could see them go more aggressively, but the point stands that I was in Bravo for the people, company structure, well cashed up. And I think the Luongo deposit in its own right can very well become a mine. But yes, just look at 2023. If there were two different metals that you would not want to be exposed to, it would be nickel and palladium. And I think it's been a mistake. But I think a lot of investors have looked at Bravo, appreciated the people involved, appreciated the geological potential, appreciated the scale of deposit, but it's just been turned off by the metals of interest. So for those folks, the fact that there's now a distinct copper flare to the story, I think it's going to drive new eyeballs. And we can already tell from the market reaction that it has as the company's up 50% or so on the back of these drill results on heavy volume. So yes, if you could choose a metal to have some exciting exposure to in today's day and age, it would be copper. So I think that does augur to the company's benefit. But I think it's also an incident or an example of why you want to tune out the metals of focus and not get too caught up, because I do believe that there are investors out there that took a look at Bravo and were frankly turned off by the metal mix of Luongo. And I think in hindsight, that will have proven to be a mistake.
So Matt, what drives this story moving forward? Because that maiden resource estimate came in just under 10 million ounces palladium equivalent. So there is the asset there. Like you said, that's why you got in. But now there's this copper angle that the market started to take note of. But the market was taking note of this story last year, in the first half of the year at least. What are the key catalysts you see here as an investor that could keep this momentum going to the upside?
Yeah, there's a lot here. In the immediate term, it's going to be all about the copper. So that is going to drive the share price for the near term. It's maybe even to medium term. We'll see how significant it is. It's still very early days, as mentioned, but we'll know shortly here whether the 50 meter step out to the east yields similar grades to the drill hole discovery announced this morning. And then subsequently, we'll learn whether the mineralization extends to the west as well. And look, these are superb grades by any standard, and 11.5 meters, 9 meters, like those are nice, hypothetically, those are nice mineable widths. So from my perspective, this is more of a question of tonnage, how big this is, and do the grades stay in that kind of stratospheric level that we saw this morning? Those are all unanswered questions to be answered here by the company. And then while that's going on, they'll still presumably be testing the remainder of these EM targets. And now it begs the question whether some of these EM targets may be IOCG related versus the feeder zone that they were originally drilling for. So they're going to be testing these other targets as well. Could come up dry. Many of them will. They may ultimately stumble upon the feeder, which would be a massive prize. The probabilities are low, but that's still in play. Or they may stumble into additional IOCG mineralization from some of the other targets. So that's a secondary thing to keep an eye on. And then, as you mentioned, behind the scenes, it's a little less sexy now, but they're still pushing full steam ahead with the Luanga deposit itself. And we should see an updated resource by the end of the year here, hopefully with a significant increase to resources, well over 10 million ounces of palladium equivalent. And I think we'll see our first economic study later in 2025. So we'll see if that corresponds with more attractive PGM and or nickel pricing. So a lot going on, but I think, yeah, this discovery blows open the doors in terms of near-term catalyst for the story. And their next two or three news releases here are going to be very closely watched.
Oh, I bet they are. Following up on discovery holes, always key for investors. We know how much volatility can happen around there. And even more importantly, the potential upside if they keep on hitting some of this high-grade material. Matt, very interesting. Thank you very much for your comments and some insights in what you're doing within the fund that you run. Always appreciate hearing, again, your moves and that more focus towards copper. Boy, oh boy, it's been in the news and the stocks have, at least some of them, started to run here. It's encouraging to see for investors in this space after 4 years of a tough market. We're truly seeing a turn and we're only about 3 months into it right now. Matt, have a great rest of your weekend. If you want to follow along and see a bit more in terms of what Matt is doing within his fund, check out that MJG Capital website, which I will post to below. Thanks for your time, Matt. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you as well. We'll talk soon, gentlemen.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.